You're listening to Fakeologist Radio Conference Call, another Fakeologist service to connect like-minded skeptics who want to share their ideas with like-minded individuals. Unlike audio chat, all you need is a telephone, whether it be a hard line or a soft line like Skype. Go to fakeologist.com/cc and learn how to participate or start a call. And hear it later on fakeologist.com. To comment on this call, find the post at audiochat.fakeologist.com and scroll through the archives. Now, on with the call.
All right, let's start recording. This is the Afternoon Commute with Fakeologist and John Adams of Afternoon Commute HoaxbustersCall.com fame. It's June 16th, 2015. This is my professional intro for the Fakeologist Conference Call, where we talk about whatever there is to talk about. And one of the problems when you talk every day is you run out of things to talk about since you haven't had a chance, or at least I haven't had a chance to listen to too much. But that's okay, John. We can make stuff up as we go along.
That's right. I actually haven't listened to... I think I've listened to two of the calls so far, so I haven't even made it to the other ones.
Well, that's two more than I, because I usually don't listen to my own calls. So
yeah.
If there's anything that you think is worthy of deletion, let me know later. But I think a few hundred people have already got to it, so it wouldn't matter now.
Yeah. So I took a look at your boating article there.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm glad you're looking at my stuff, because that means that I know about it.
Yeah, what was the indicator to you that you believed that it was fraudulent?
Okay, well, what I'm talking about is a post I made yesterday on June... Was it today I made it or yesterday? June 15th or 16th, 2015.
I think
and
you
it was
did
the
it.
Top... Yesterday?
Yeah, I think you posted it yesterday at some point.
Yeah, can you remember the title of it? Because I can't right now. It was something about...
It was like I looked away and he was gone or something?
Yeah, it reminded me of the John or the No Agenda clip that they play in over again at noagenda.com, where they talk about someone is saying something about the snuff videos, the ISIS snuff videos, where she says, and then her head was... And then their head
was
gone.
Was gone. And her head was gone.
Yeah, I can't remember what clip that's from. I don't know what that's from.
That's Dianne Feinstein talking about, like, when they first started rolling out the ISIS BS.
Okay. Well, the reason I posted it, because I do, my first go-to when I read the media is local media, because it seemingly would be the most relevant to me. So the top story in Toronto yesterday was man overboard. A guy that was on a cruise line in Lake Ontario, which is just in front of the Toronto main downtown area, and he went tooting around in the boat, and he fell overboard. Anytime a story is the main story in all the media, then of course you have to pay attention to it because they're telling you to. But you're asked, what is the clue? Well, I posted a number of problems with it. The main one was that he was a 34-year-old guy that flew from London, Ontario, which is only 100 miles from Toronto. So to fly 100 miles with two people already raises red flags. Unless you're a very rich person, these short regional flights don't make any sense to do, especially when you have more than one person, because if you do the math, it's very expensive. Regional flight. That was number one. But number two was he's allegedly a certified lifeguard, yet he drowns in the water off a boat. Okay? But again, it's a minor story to me to even care about. But then I started looking at some of the video news clips about it. And when you research what I research, 9/11 fakery and the victims and the false eyewitnesses, you really get attuned to certain words and phrases and stories. And when people describe victims as had a heart of gold and and would do anything. There's a selection of stock phrases that recur over and over again, and they are to elicit emotional responses. And when you are in a heightened state of emotional awareness or turmoil, you're more susceptible to being injected with a idea and or a deception. And I made that post just a minute ago at fakeologist.com. So that was another clue. A lifeguard that drowned. How likely is that? And then you see some pictures of the guy. The guy looks like the Incredible Hulk in terms of strength. And when you see the alleged fiancé, who was watching him drown the whole time, saying that he was holding on to the side of the boat or the back of the boat, yet he just couldn't hold on any longer. Well, what happened? Were both his arms broken? Because this guy's a musclehead. You would think he had some kind of extra strength to get those bags of muscles.
Yep.
So many contradictions. And then her performance, her tearless performance, describing the situation was pretty much enough to set this into the very likely a hoax file for me.
Yeah, it looks pretty interesting to say the least. It's like you said, that's the first thing that stuck out for me was that he drowned, but he was a lifeguard, so... You know, it's funny how you see a lot of stories like that with weird contradictions in it.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll do something ridiculous, and it'll be, I don't even know. Like, let's just say lion tamer killed by house cat or something, you know?
Yes.
Like, there's lots of stories like that, and people, it's funny because people actually enjoy those contradictions on a subconscious level. Like, there's a certain type of enjoyment to it where the contradictory element of it is interesting to you, and so you get a kind of a pleasure out of it. Like, oh, the lifeguard, he was a lifeguard, but he drowned. And, isn't that interesting? So.
Well, it makes it more sensational of a story.
Exactly.
It makes it more interesting, like you said. Or it could also make you more worried. Well, if a lifeguard drowns after falling off a boat, what chance do I have if I go on a cruise and fall off the boat?
Or your cruise liner tips over?
Yeah.
Yeah, like we've talked there, about, this contributes to the war on travel.
Well, it's the war on, any kind of non-critical or pleasurable activity. Now, the war on mobility.
Yeah.
Yeah, just do your job, go home, lock yourself in, don't come out unless you're ready to work. Don't go for any fun or pleasure, which sadly kind of describes my life, but that's another story. But I just listened to, this is related. I listened to Mark Sargent, who is of the Flat Earth Blues Club and video fame on YouTube, and Crow, CRROW, who has the Moonwave videos where he alleges that there's some kind of electronic scanner wave that he's captured a couple times or 12 times of the moon with his telescope / digital camera, high megapixel unit setup. And they were talking back and forth about many things, including Crow's videos, including a little flat earth, including NASA, all my favorite topics when it comes to what's up and above. And I'm not sure about Crow's video. I didn't even actually look at it, I don't think. I just like to hear him talk about it. But I don't really know where he stands on it. Or what it's all about. Is it just a distraction? Is it real? I just don't know, and I almost don't really care. But I do like Crow's discussions about NASA and fakery. And he made two comments in that audio
or YouTube that I just posted at fakeologist.com, and I made the post on my site. It's called Belief is the Enemy of Knowing. And I can't play the clip now because I am mobile, but people should go to the two time indicators that I put in the post and have a listen, because they're really profound and really well thought out concepts that you might like, John. One is at 43:30, belief is the enemy of knowing, and the other one is at 1:39:33, and I'll paraphrase, and he says, one of the goals of all the false news is to put you in a heightened emotional state. The reason this is done is because humans are most susceptible to influence during emotional distress. And that is one of the best explanations I've heard of why all this fake news all the time. Go ahead.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. There's not really that many interesting stories out there to talk about. So I remember being a teenager. That's really when my interest in television started waning, as far as like regular TV. You know, obviously I would have watched movies and things like that. But I just remember like the news would come on and I'd try to watch the local news, and it's like it's story. I think these stories probably still exist today. Even though it's been a long time since I've watched, you know, regular news, you know, it's something about, like, you know, somebody who had a birthday party in their backyard or something. Like, literally, they're those type of stories. Now, I've got nothing against those type of stories per se. I actually think that if you're going to exist in the system and you're going to have news, it actually should be more local than anything else. And you probably should try to have more, you know, quote-unquote media in your local area reporting on your local stuff, because that would actually make it better. But that's far gone, because it actually used to be like that. Like, the people who lived in, you know, Fullerton, where I work, they would actually read the local Fullerton paper. But nobody reads a local Fullerton paper anymore, right? Nobody even reads the Los Angeles Times anymore. So you need sensationalized type of stories, because the party about the story about the local birthday party is not interesting enough. It needs to be a story about the local birthday party where, you know, someone was hitting the pinata and it turned out the pinata was actually a real dog inside the pinata, or something stupid like that.
I agree. Local stories are dull, and they don't sell papers, and they don't do a lot for you.
Yeah, and so it's also the idea that, you know, you get interesting things happening in your daily life with your interaction with people, and so you've got a, and I don't mean this literally. I know people, you know, who may listen to somebody like David Icke or something like that might take it literally. I don't really believe you have a memory card in your head, and that's not what I'm saying. But you have a memory in your natural brain that is like a movie, okay? And every day is a different scene, and you're collecting all of the memories in your brain, and so people, because a film is kind of similar in a way, and so we identify with that. But an interesting part about that is now people want a, you know, kind of a dramatic things to happen in their life. They wouldn't be happy like how, you know, you're describing. You say you go to work, you come home, that's kind of what you do, right? People want sensational things to happen. Yeah, and people want sensational things to happen to them, but sensational things don't happen to them. So they need to have those stories there to fulfill their vicarious nature. And that's been around for a long time, living vicariously through entertainment and you know, the media stars and all that type of stuff. It's been around quite a while.
So you're saying we need to fill up our dull lives with the excitement of others, seemingly exciting lives.
Yeah, I think we've been trained to do that. I think people, like we've talked about before, you know, people used to make their own entertainment. Right now, you and I, we're entertaining ourselves by doing this.
Yes, I enjoy this because it's way more entertaining than getting someone else's information.
Yeah, so you're entertaining yourself. You're doing something. You're having a discussion. You're, you know, building something in the backyard. You're making music. You're doing whatever. That used to be entertainment, self-entertainment. But now you've externalized power and you've given it over to the television, the movies, and I definitely don't have too big of a problem with people, you know, taking in a little external entertainment once in a while, even though I don't participate in that myself anymore. I used to. But yeah, now people externalize all of it. It's like now you, you know, like I was saying yesterday, some guy asked me, oh, what are you going to do this weekend? I said, I'll probably stay at home. What are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to go to the movies. I'm going to go to Disneyland. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do that. And it's like everything that's going to entertainment has been entertain him has been externalized.
Yeah, it's nothing that he's going to do for himself. It's what everyone is going to do for him. His imagination is replaced with outside external stimulation all the time. There's no time for him to think or dream or make something happen on his own or create.
Yep.
And that's why there's such a lack of creation and imagination. It's all stifled.
Yeah, it is.
Because everyone's overcharged.
Yeah, and then a lot of times when people are creative and they do have, you know, the notion to create things, they'll go somewhere else to look for an idea to be creative with. So, you know, I've run into this over many years, just being in music, like being in different bands. Somebody would, this guy, I'll just use an example. This guy I used to be in a band with, he was always like trying to find what the latest sound was and then try to write a song like that and copy it. Because he thought if he could make a song that sounded like that, that somehow somebody was going to notice it and want to make him a rock star or something. And I would say, dude, just play what you like, and then, you know, maybe somebody will like it because, you know, you actually put some heart and soul into it, not because you copied somebody else's sound and then, you know, were able to capitalize on that. And that's what a lot of people do. A lot of people who have the ability to be creative, they go looking for templates already set out for them to apply their creativity to.
Yes, I agree.
So, another interesting thing, thought I'd bring this up since we were talking about earlier, is the Flight 175 video from Marcus. Would you like to talk about that really quick?
Yeah, that's fine. That video we're talking about, describe what it is and how many hits and where you found it or where it resurfaced recently.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many hits it has because I haven't looked on YouTube, but I was looking on InfoWars, and apparently somehow one of Marcus Allen's videos ended up on Shaquille O'Neal's website and some other people's website, and I think like the New York Post or something like that. Anyways, it got a lot of hits on YouTube and a lot of people looked at it, and the most interesting thing to me was that it was reported on by InfoWars, and so they're going over the whole thing with Shaquille O'Neal. Like, people were speculating that he was some sort of 9/11 truther or something because this came up on there. But they didn't talk about the contents of the video, about how the video goes over how Flight 175 is completely and totally fake, and that is totally, completely brushed over. And so you have InfoWars reporting on this video with, not even commenting on the contents of it is pretty funny and sad at the same time that this stuff just constantly gets brushed over by people, especially in the mainstream alternative media. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, and you have to ask yourself, why was this story put into the media at all? Because you know damn well, I guess it's plausible that Shaquille didn't know about it being put on his own website, but the whole charade seems just like that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Did you ever see that clip of, since we were talking about Mason yesterday, did you ever see that clip of Shaquille on the Sports Center with his huge bling Mason ring?
Sorry, John, hold on one sec.
Sure.
One sec, John.
Yeah, so I'll tell the story. Shaquille O'Neal was on some sports show, and one of the commenters, the guy sitting next to him, said, "Man, that is, you know, that's a good looking ring there." And then Shaquille O'Neal shows it to him. It's like this huge Mason's ring, and he even says that on the clip. He says, "Yeah, that's my Mason's ring." And it's funny because it looks like one of the other commenter guys is getting told in his earpiece to we got to cut this short. You know, Shaq needs to stop talking about his Mason's ring because he's like putting it in the camera. He's showing it up close and everything. And then you see one of the other guys like, okay, all right, well, let's wrap it up here. It's a pretty funny clip if you can go and find it. And, yep.
Sorry, I just heard that. So you're saying there's a video of Shaq with his Mason ring, and you're saying that they've tried to gloss over the topic?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In an interview?
Yeah, it's a great clip. I'm sure you can still find it somewhere. It's from a couple of years ago.
And what do you think the purpose of that was? That, oh, it's a secret, but, oh, don't talk about it?
Yeah, I think a lot of times, like we were talking about yesterday, and not to even get off into a discussion about Masons again, but I think a lot of these guys talk off the cuff. Like, they don't really see a problem with talking about that type of stuff, and they just start talking about it, and they're proud of it. Like I said, the guys in my office, they would wear their Masons rings in the office, and they would openly invite people to come to a lodge meeting and talk about it. So to certain guys, they're not really... they don't really care too much, or they're kind of proud of it. I see people driving around all the time with Mason stickers on their car.
Well, you know, again, it doesn't seem like it's an insidious organization. Let's be honest. It's good for the people to join. They have charitable things that seem good and all good. So I don't think it's an evil empire. It's just the whole concept of when people with secrets get into positions of power, that's the only thing that one I question.
Yeah, I would disagree with you on one point. I think the organization is evil, but I don't think the people in it are necessarily evil. Just mm-hmm. the people who are in positions of power, they're right for the picking when it comes to corruption. That's just what it comes
right
down to is you're in a position of power, you're in a secret society, you're perfect for corruption right there.
Yeah, I guess you're right, because you don't want the secrets getting out, or I suppose one would consider that being a secret society would be a personal liability.
It'd almost be
better to beat your wife.
Yeah, and whereas like 50, 60 years ago, you couldn't get the general population to participate in something like faking a story about your lifeguard boyfriend falling over a boat. But now, because we've been able to be corrupted as a people, then you could come up to people hire people as actors and say, yeah, here's what we're going to do, and that's what it is, and you're going to get paid for it, so play along with it, and someone will say, well, yeah, of course I would do that. Get paid money.
You're saying that wasn't done in the past?
No, it was done in the past, but I don't think that it was. I guarantee you, I could pull my car over and go up to someone's house right now on this street, and
yeah.
pull up to their house and offer them money to participate in a fake story, and they would do it.
Okay. Just be an actor, you mean? Well, you're in Hollywood pretty much, so. Everyone's an actor in Los Angeles, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm about 33 miles away from Los Angeles, so I'm quite a ways away.
But the point is, everyone's just an actor waiting for a gig.
Everybody is, yeah. If somebody came up to you and not offering you something insidious, but if somebody came up to you, hey, Tim, I've got $10,000, you know, from this company. You seem like a nice guy. How about a little bit part in this movie I've got? This little low budget thing I've got. I'll give you $500. You want to do it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess if without context, it sounds fine, right?
Yeah. But I guarantee you, if you told somebody like, hey, you know, this is what this all breaks down to. You're going to have to, you know, sign a non-disclosure agreement or keep your mouth shut about it. And people would say, well, yeah, am I getting paid? Am I getting money? Okay, of course. Of course I'll keep my mouth shut. I'm getting money.
Yeah, well, that's all it takes is a few bucks, huh?
I think so. I think it's real. And like I said, I don't totally believe it's everybody's fault. Like, I don't hold people at fault because, we've been told that we live in desperate times.
And, yeah, we're always on the verge of collapse.
Always on the verge of collapse, and, you know, you can drive all over California and just see poverty-stricken people everywhere. And so I know that there's tough times all over, but it's also... It's also the illusion of that times are tougher than they are, too, to kind of make people desperate.
Well, they put people in distress. And
yeah.
that, again, is another condition where they're right for influencing. And that's what it's all about. That's what media fakery, culture creation is all about. Put people at their most susceptible. And that would be a heightened emotional state, and that would be fear, and they'll do anything that you suggest to them through any method possible. NLP, psychic driving, all the techniques to make them do what you want without force. Make
yes.
them want it. Make them beg for it.
Yeah, here's an interesting thing. I've got a page open to The Culture Industry by Theodore Adorno. Let me just read this real quick.
Okay.
Interested parties explain the culture industry in technological terms. It is alleged that because millions participate in the culture industry, certain reproduction processes are necessary that inevitably require identical needs in innumerable places to be satisfied with identical goods. The technical contrast between the few production centers and the large number of widely dispersed consumption points is said to demand organization and planning by management. Furthermore, it is claimed that standards were based in the first place on consumers' needs and for that reason were accepted with so little resistance. The result is the circle of manipulation and retroactive need in which the unity of the system grows ever stronger. No mention is made of the fact that the basis on which technology acquires power over society is the power of those whose economic hold over society is the greatest. A technological rationale is the rationale of domination itself. It is the coercive nature of society alienated from itself. Automobiles, bombs, and movies keep the whole thing together until their leveling element shows its strength in the very wrong which it furthered. It has made the technology of the culture industry no more than the achievement of the standardization and mass production, sacrificing whatever involved a distinction between the logic of the work and that of the system. Okay? Now, he went in a very long-winded way to basically say that the culture industry and all of us participating in that culture industry just, you know, justifies itself in a circular fashion.
Right.
You see,
yeah,
like,
can you remind everyone who Theodor Adorno was?
Yeah, Theodor Adorno is, was a philosopher of sorts. He was part of what was called the Frankfurt School out of Frankfurt, Germany, with a couple of other guys, Max Horkheimer, Herbert Marcuse, and Eric Fromm, Walter Benjamin. And they were given the task, apparently, this is not something that I could actually point to something somewhere and say this is an actual 100% fact, but I believe this to be true, and I'm taking that word belief on a light note there. But it is evident to be true that these guys were given some sort of assignment to kind of disrupt culture in America and to influence the people who do the influencing. They weren't expecting the average person on the street to go out and read something like Theodor Adorno or, you know, Walter Benjamin, although Walter Benjamin was widely read at one point. But what they wanted was the academic class and the people who implement things into society and the culture creators to be aware of these guys and to influence their perspectives. And so Theodor Adorno, whereas he's right about a lot of things that he writes about, his books like Philosophy of Music and this essay here, The Culture Industry, he makes a lot of great points that I totally agree with. But the reason that he's putting that out is so that he can show flaws within the American system so that it disrupts it. And that was the purpose behind it. It wasn't really an altruistic purpose, like, hey, I'm going to, like, kind of what you and I or anybody else who tries to point things out to people who don't know about something, you know, ours is a good intention. Like, hey, I want to show you this because I want you to know about it because it may help you in some way. Well, there's also the way of showing people something that may be the truth, but you're doing it because you want to shift their culture and change their opinions so that you can guide them in another direction.
Well, if I had a purpose, it would be just to tell people that there's more to the story than you might think. And I was talking to one guy today who dabbles in the Internet and the Illuminati, and I was trying to boil down all my research in a couple digestible bites. I said, if I don't do anything else in my research and my blog and my talk, I just want people to ask the question that they've never asked before, and that is it possible that this story is fake and why? Because that is never a question that people ask because they're not ever, they're so many details of the story that are more interesting or more or given to people, if they never ask the question, could it be a fake story? And if everyone asked the question, could this story be fake, and if you gave them clues as to fakery and gave them clues to the fact that society is far more manufactured than random, then it could help unwind the whole system or change it with that simple question and the reasons why it could be fake.
That's right. And see, what he's talking about here when he says, when technology acquires power over society, it's interesting, you know, he wrote that in the 40s, okay?
And okay, that's a long time ago, yeah. Coming up to 100 years.
Yeah, so he makes a good point there because, and it ties into what you're talking about because he You see, the more technology is more prominent in our society today, like people are more aware of, well, let's just take the word technology. People are more aware of the word technology. Back in the 1980s, nobody talked about technology in a regular conversation. It wasn't something prominently talked about. Now people are into tech, you know, like they say on the No Agenda show, tech news. So that's something that's kind of a, I guess, fad-driven part of culture is being into technology and things like that. So technology is more in your face, but at the same time, the more it acquires power over society, the more easily it is to fake stuff. And the reason why I come to that conclusion is because, one, there is the hypnotic element of things that are technological, the cell phone, the computer, the high-definition televisions, all that type of stuff. You have, you know, the movies becoming more digitized and less realistic looking. Now you're hypnotized by the technology itself. People think that, like, the movie is cooler looking when it looks faker as opposed to more real. And so the technology in and of itself is hypnotic to certain aspects of society. Not to me. I think it looks terrible. I think computer graphic imagery looks terrible on the movie screen. So seeing a movie with CGI type stuff, I think it looks fake. It doesn't look real. So I never took a liking to it. But a lot of people actually like that fake look. And,
well, it is getting better too, isn't it?
I'd say to a certain extent it is, and they probably already have a really, really, really good CGI, but they're probably building us up slowly, inch by inch, towards the CGI where it's indistinguishable from real life, which, interestingly enough, I can't find the passage right now, but there's a line from this particular essay where Adorno says, soon life will be indistinguishable from the movies. He says that in the culture industry essay. And what he...
Can you repeat that again? Sir, I missed that. What did Adorno say?
He says... here, if you give me a second here, I'll find the quote real quick. Okay, you ready?
Go, I'm ready.
Okay, it says, the whole world is made to pass through the filter of the culture industry. Real life is becoming indistinguishable from the movies. And that was written in 1943. He was already on to that idea.
Or as a futurist, he was proposing that idea for people to follow. Or that was the goal of maybe the movie business. Movie business was only, what, 20, 30 years old at that point, or was it older?
Yeah, it was only 20-some-odd years old, yeah. Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says the whole world is made to pass through the filter of the culture industry. The old experience of the moviegoer, who sees the world outside as an extension of the film he has just left because the latter is intent upon reproducing the world of everyday perceptions, is now the producer's guideline. The more intensely and flawlessly his techniques duplicate empirical objects, the easier it is today for the illusion to prevail that the outside world is the straightforward continuation of that presented on the screen. Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting. Very prescient, very predictive.
Yep. He just happened to know that.
He's one of the culture creators. They wanted to make it happen. George Orwell. All these guys are put there to condition us for the future, and essentially, basically, test out people's people's reaction immediately to these thoughts.
Yeah, I tend to agree that a lot of people would find someone like George Orwell as you know, someone altruistic in his ventures, in his writings and that type of stuff, and I'm not so sure. I used to think so, but then when I think of the company that he kept and that his books are readily available in all schools, I'm thinking that's kind
they're
of
required reading. Forget readily available. They're required reading.
Yeah, 1984 wasn't required reading when I was in school, but Animal Farm was. And then, like, your teacher will kind of, like, you know, make mention of 1984, and then someone like myself would go, went out and read it after reading Animal Farm. So, yeah, it's kind
of... And, speaking of Animal Farm, that was brought up in one of those CIA audio cast podcasts with Tom Secker and Dworkin's policy guy. They were talking about that. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, they financed the movie 1984 and the Animal Farm movie.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, unfortunately, with those guys, they tend to not recognize the obvious. Like, all of their research, it was funny when Chris was interviewing Pierce Redmond on his own, Chris actually made a point that Pierce Redmond just kind of brushed over, and that was, hey, you know, all of your research reinforces the idea that everything's fake. the fact that the CIA was involved with putting those films out, and the way that they're kind of reporting it in their podcast series was, oh, yeah, well, the CIA, you know, they use communists to further their own aims, right? And when you get down to the nitty-gritty of it, it's like, well, no, they work together. It's not like they're using the communists to do it. It's like they're working together to further one goal that they all have. And all of those divisions are just covers.
Yeah, they're all working together to create a dialectic, to create tension, to create the false enemy, so people don't realize that the real enemy is the citizenry. It always has been, always will be. It's always the king versus the peasants. We just have different kings now.
You know, I'm in some work. You want to keep talking real quick?
Oh, it's okay. We'll just let it go quiet and I'll flip it out.
All right.
Did you just go buy something at the chicken farm?
No, that was the other day when we were on the call. I had to do that silently.
So you still drink? Speaking about food, you say you drink raw milk?
Yes, actually, you know, it's funny, is yesterday I purchased some raw milk while we were on the call, and it was on sale, so I had to go back today and buy some more.
Well, not that it's the best place to get my food advice from, but I do follow two very pretty girls on YouTube, Fully Raw Christina and Haley the Banana Girl, and I have to admit, I have some pretty base reasons for watching them, but okay. There's two girls. One is Fully Raw Christina, based in Houston, I believe, and she's selling, not literally, but she's promoting Fully Raw lifestyle. And if she really is eating what she says she is, then I would say it works. And the other one is called Freely the Banana Girl. I have no idea how exactly I found these people, but I do watch them still. And Freely the Banana Girl pretty much convinced me to stop eating dairy.
Oh, okay.
Including Fully, now I haven't done that, of course, but I have stopped buying Fully Raw milk or any mill, eating any mill, mainly because it's too inconvenient. It's too hard to meet up with the farmer for me.
Yeah.
But the point is, they make some very compelling arguments.
I don't subscribe to that. I think the raw diet's not healthy, personally.
Okay.
So
what about it do you not agree with?
First of all, there's a different definition of what raw is, actually, because you can heat something up to a certain point and it can still be considered technically raw, like when you sear tuna or something. I think meat, the less meat is cooked, the better it is for you. If you're burning your meat on the grill, it's probably not retaining a lot of the nutrients. I think that from what I've experienced and what I've read is that, you see, a lot of vegetables have what's called phytoestrogens in them. And a vegetable has the phytoestrogens in it as kind of a defense system against predators. And so when you cook a vegetable to a certain point, it releases a lot of those, so they're not totally active. And you actually get more of the mineral content out of the vegetable when you cook it than you would if you were to eat it raw all the time. And a lot of those things too, like eating a lot of people who eat the raw food diet, they rely on legumes and nuts for protein and that type of stuff. And I don't think that eating beans and nuts all the time is good. It's actually got an acidic quality to it that, for lack of a better word, can rot your teeth. So I don't think that eating nuts is bad or eating beans is bad, but if that's kind of your main protein source and you're eating a lot of that, I don't think it agrees too well with your digestive system overall. I think we're kind of omnivores, and we're designed to eat a whole lot of different type of stuff, and I think cooking is a good thing overall, but not too much.
Yeah, I tend to be a balanced person, so I tend to agree with you.
Yeah.
But I'm still eating more raw than I ever did before, because it just makes logical sense to me. But what about the milk aspect, that cow's milk is for cow young. Human milk is for human young.
I don't know. I see how people could come to that conclusion. The only problem that I would have with it is, you see, you can't digest grass. So you need to be able to, eat grass. And the only way you can eat grass is to eat the meat of the animal that ate the grass. Right, because that's where you're getting your calcium from. Like, calcium comes from grass and, alfalfa. You know, if you eat alfalfa sprouts, that's a good form of calcium. That's what they say, right? So,
well, they also say there's lots of calcium in a raw vegetable.
Right.
Natural. Yeah.
Well, I'm not even so sure that we can digest things like spinach very good. Because our stomachs just aren't really designed for that. I think we have canine teeth for a reason, and it's probably to bite into meat and to be able to get the vitamins that we need out of the things that we eat, which would be animals. Then, you could drink the animal's milk as well. I don't see a problem with that. The thing of it is, a lot of people who subscribe to the vegetarian diet or something like that, which I used to think that way, but something started to make sense to me. It's like, okay, well, nobody makes a cheetah be a vegetarian, right? A cheetah couldn't.
Yeah.
A domestic house cat, you could not have a domestic house cat be a vegetarian. It would be impossible.
Yeah. Well, I want to speak to your canine teeth. our canines are nowhere near the canine teeth of a real meat eater. Our canines are just sharp, pointy teeth that are meant to tear into the flesh of fruit. And I got that concept probably from the Jungle Surfer, who is a bit of an interesting character, but he was making a good argument that our faces, the whole design, our hands, they're all meant and designed for soft, fleshy, pickable fruit. And that one little canine is not meant to tear into and shred meat. It just pierces the skin of an apple or an orange or any other fruit to get at the goodness inside. So you can really argue it both. You can see how you can argue it many different ways. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, just from my empirical experience, did you ever hear that interview we did with that lady Nancy DeVille?
Yeah, I did. I heard all your interviews. But that was she was some kind of health book or something.
Yeah, yeah. And, she kind of, I guess, reinforced my idea of what I've actually experienced myself is that when I've different times in my life when I just ate like all fruit and all vegetables and nuts and all that type of stuff, I did not feel good at all. I didn't feel good.
Yeah.
I found for myself personally, and I'm just giving this a recommendation for anybody who's listening, I found that raw milk makes my digestion work a lot better.
Yeah.
And so that's why I drink it.
It's hard to diagnose for everyone, but the only argument that the one thing I heard from, say, Frilly the Banana Girl is they say eat as many calories, fruit, and vegetables as you can, and the tendency would be to back off, but no, you can't overeat those two food groups, and the idea is you overload, eat as many calories as your body wants, and stop counting the calories because these are good calories, and that's part of the problem. Is people might not eat enough of them and then feel weak because they just don't have enough digestible food in them, and this food is meant to go in, be used right away, not stored as fat. And for the average, fairly lackadaisical lifestyle, which our society is now, you probably just need a certain amount of readily available food, like fruit, because it doesn't get converted to fat for storage later, for use later. And if you're feeling weak, my guess is people just aren't eating quite enough of it. But it isn't, with all the other food choices out there, the processed food, it's very difficult because we're just overloaded with choice right now. And most
True.
Of it is convenient and injected with sugar, which is, I really do believe sugar is more powerful a drug than cocaine or heroin in the end.
Yeah, those highs don't last very long. Your sugar high
lasts. That's why you need more.
Your sugar high lasts forever because it's readily available down the street.
It's in almost every food, every processed food, artificial,
yeah.
And the artificial sugar sweeteners are 100 times sweeter and 100 times cheaper, and that's why they are injected into everything to keep you coming back for more, like a good drug dealer would recommend.
That's right, and it's just food fakery. We'll just call it that. And on that note, my friend, I'm going to go rip into the flesh of an animal right now.
At the end of your driveway. All right,
yeah.
Nice chatting with you.
All right, I'll speak to you. I don't know if we'll talk tomorrow. I might talk to Chris tomorrow. So.
Oh, that'd be good. I'll listen to that. Yeah.
Maybe,
good. Excellent.
Talk on Thursday or Friday or something.
Sure, we'll be in touch. All right, take care, John.
All right, man. Later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Hi, this is Java Ring, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.